right at the very outset. There was the suspicion that the 2.5 tribes on the east side of Jordan were building a pagan idol. Well, those states were getting out of line, so the others came together, and they were going to bring them back into line. So it wasn't a national monarchy. It wasn't so much a nation. It was 12 states working under one rule of law, and they had capable men that feared God, loved truth, and hated covetousness that were supposed to be the administrators or judges of that law. So I think that that is, if we look at it, that is the ideal. And that is, in fact, the pattern that we were modeled after in the United States. Sadly, we have abandoned that. Whatever we once were, we no longer are. And there's been many infractions, but this week is just amazing. I never thought I'd see a day where the FBI wouldn't follow up on some of the criminal actions of Hillary Clinton or Hunter Biden or President Biden. But they make this raid of the former president's home when he, in fact, is the front runner to be the opponent of the sitting president in the next election. That reads like something you'd see out of a third world nation or a banana republic. Sadly, that's what we've become. The hiring of 87,000 new members of the Gestapo. Are you kidding me? For what purpose? Understand that this current administration, in fact, it's the deep state in Washington, has declared war on liberty. So we are at a crisis point. However, tonight we're going to be teaching on God's instruction on economics from a biblical perspective. I thought this was quite interesting. Rose Publishing, which is a company that provides a number of resources that I have great respect for, they released this that stated that, did you know that in the Bible, there are four times more verses about money and economics than there are about prayer and faith. Yet amazingly, most Christians learn their economics from the pagan secular world. Therefore, most Christians are up to their eyeballs in debt, barely being able to make their payments, living paycheck to paycheck. They say we can't afford to tithe because we don't have enough money. And we borrow money to buy things that we don't need to impress people that we don't even like. Now, where did we get that idea? Well, that's what we've learned because by default, since pastors don't teach economics. In fact, most pastors don't know, come here from Sikkim, about economics. But because we don't teach that, then by default, the only place you can learn it is from the lost secular world. So tonight we're going to do a summary, and we're going to cover some of these some of these biblical principles of economics. So number one, within the Bible is the right to own private property. Again, we talked about how interesting that was. The Jews, after being in bondage for 400 years, being slaves, being liberated. First thing that God did was say, hey, you know what? You guys need a day off every week. What a gift that is. So you are required to rest one day in seven. Even your animals are to rest. No one's to work. This is for you. It's not about me. This is for you. It's for my glory. And then said, once you get to the promised land, it's going to be yours. You're going to have your own land to hand down from generation to generation. And of course, within the Decalogue itself, we have the defense of private property rights. You shall not steal. Well, you can only steal something that belongs to someone else. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. So your neighbor owns his own house, nor your neighbor's wife, nor anything that your neighbor possesses. Because actions begin in the mind. If you start going down this trail here, it will eventually be carried out here. Deuteronomy 19 talks about private property rights. You shall not move your neighbor's boundary mark. In other words, don't mess with the established property rights of another individual. Another thing that we see taught in Scripture is that you are to pay your employees on time. Don't withhold their pay. But what you paid them was based upon the free market. What you paid them was not determined by a governing authority, but what are you willing to pay for a job, and what are they willing to work for? No such thing as minimum wage. Leviticus 19 says this about the subjects that I just mentioned. You shall not defraud your neighbor, neither rob him. The wages of him that is hired shall not abide with thee all night until the morning. Some of these laborers were literally living day to day. If you didn't pay them at the end of the day, they didn't feed their family that night. So the law of God says you will not withhold your wages. If you've agreed to pay them at the end of the day, then you will in fact pay them at the end of the day. And if you don't, it's considered theft. We see in Matthew chapter 20 when Jesus gives this parable of the kingdom of heaven is like a farmer that went out at daybreak to hire workers. Of course, you know the story. He hired some in the morning, agreeing to pay them a denarius for a day's labor, which was the standard rate. A penny for a day, that was a full day's wage for a full day's labor. He went out again at noon. He went out again in the afternoon and hired more workers hanging around with him. He said, hey, well, you want to do some work? You earn some money today? Yeah, we would. What are you paying? A denarius? Great. Sign me up. Let's go do some work. Well, when it got time to the end of the day, when it was time to pay them, he started with the men that had been hired last toward the end of the day. Paid them a denarius. Well, the guys that had started working earlier assumed that since they had worked all day and these men only worked a partial day, that they would be paid more, but they weren't. And they complained about it. And he said, why are you complaining about my generosity? Did I not keep my word to you? Did I not hire you a day's labor for a day's wage? You agreed to work for me all day for a denarius. Don't hate me because I decided to be generous with these other individuals. You know what that is? That is freedom. That is a freedom to pay. Obviously, this man met his obligation, but he hired workers that agreed to work for a rate of pay that he was willing to pay them. So that is, in fact, a free market principle. As a matter of fact, the same thing was established. You go all the way back to Jacob when he was dealing with Uncle Laban. And Uncle Laban said, hey, you're family, but I've got to pay you a fair day's wage. And he said, I will pay you whatever you demand to be paid. So there was agreement there between the employer and the employee. Next, work was understood. Laziness was scorned. And if one refused to work, then the response from the Lord was, well, let him go hungry. A workman should be worthy of his hire. Proverbs chapter 6 tells us this. Go and consider the work of the ant, you slug. Consider the ant's ways and learn. The ant has no captain, no overseer or ruler, yet provides her supplies in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. How long will you slumber, you slug? When will you get up from just lying around the house? Oh, just a little more sleep. I want to sleep in a little bit. I'll hit the snooze button. Just a little more slumber. Let me fold my hands across my chest. I need to get my rest. Says your poverty is going to come upon you like a prowler, and your need will take you like an armed man. So learn from the ant who works during the proper season and stores up for the winter season. And if you just lounge around and refuse to work, then recognize where this is going to lead. Biblical truth, hard work, mind your own business, support your family. So we see Solomon's wisdom given to us in Proverbs. Now we see Rabbi Apostle Paul writing to the church in Thessalonica said, don't you remember when we were with you? This we commanded you, that if anyone refuses to work, then they shouldn't eat. Don't be compassionate upon a bum. If there is a person that has a genuine need, which we'll talk about here in a minute, then that's one thing. But if a person just refuses to work and wants to live off your good graces, then let that person go hungry. Let me ask you a question. Has it been intriguing to you that supposedly we have record unemployment right now? Like 3.5%. It has also been interesting that when you go to a hotel, they don't provide cleaning of your room every day. You know why? They don't have enough help. You notice many restaurants you go to that are normally open certain hours, yet now are closed. Why? Because they don't have enough help. It's amazing that we have record unemployment, yet we have so many jobs that are out there needing to be filled. And please recognize that the government keeps redefining what unemployment actually means. And they're paying people not to work right now. Because the enemy of socialism is private property ownership and the small businessman. And they're still working, just like they started with the COVID hoax, to shut down and cripple small business. But Paul says, for we hear that there are some which walk among you or live among you in a disorderly manner. How is that, Paul? Not working at all, but instead you're meddling in everybody else's business. Now them that are such, we command and we exhort by our Lord Jesus Christ that you shut your mouth, go to work, and feed yourself and your family. By the way, this is the well-doing that Paul says, don't grow weary in doing it. You know, ladies and gentlemen, it's just simply doing the right thing one day after the other. The Christian life is lived one day at a time. You get up, you set the alarm, you get up, get out of bed, you go shower, you get dressed, you go to work, you budget, you save, you do that, and then rinse and repeat day after day after day. Next thing you know, you look in the mirror and you go, what happened to my life? Where did all those wrinkles come from? All right. Another economic truth, hard work and success is rewarded. Slothfulness is rebuked. I love this parable of the talents. It absolutely smashes the idea of Marxism. Because you see, these different individuals were entrusted by the Lord with a certain investment portfolio. So imagine you have your portfolio and you hire somebody from Merrill Lynch, you hire somebody from Morgan Stanley, hire somebody from this group and that group. At the end of the year, you look, hey, this group's doubled my money. This group has got a 50% increase. This group didn't do anything. Well, what are you going to do in managing your portfolio? You're going to take your money out of that investment strategist because he's doing a crappy job. And you're going to put it with the man that's doing the best job, which is exactly what Jesus endorsed here, even to the point of don't let your money just sit doing being idle. At least put it in the bank where it's drawing some interest. Biblical principles of budgeting are taught. Luke chapter 14, Jesus teaches, for which of you intends to build something and you don't run a budget first to make sure that you can actually have enough money to complete the project? Which king goes to war without assessing the situation, considering the number of troops that the opposition has and the number of troops that he has before he even sets out on the expedition? The Bible teaches us to save for lean times. Look at Joseph that literally went from the pit to the penthouse when he interpreted Pharaoh's dream, and Pharaoh commissioned him to, during the 7 years of plenty, save up for and prepare for the 7 lean years. That's a solid principle that we need to consider and put into practice. You've heard me say the diversification of your assets for protection. Look at this principle. Jacob was on his way back after all those years with Uncle Laban, coming back with his whole family and great wealth as he was getting imminently closer to meeting with his former brother Esau. He was afraid and distressed. And he divided, sorry, I shouldn't have a space there, the people that were with him and the flocks and the herds and the camels into two companies. What is that called? Reducing risk, diversifying your portfolio. And he said, perhaps Esau will take one and the others will escape. So again, I referenced last week the old adage, you don't put all your eggs in one basket. During the crazy economic times that we would be facing, I would recommend that you diversify. I am not an investment manager, and I do not make any recommendations. But I think you would be wise to have a little bit of cash somewhere accessible. I think you'd be wise to be in hard assets like gold and silver. And I think you'd be wise to still have something in the market. That means to diversify your investment. So if you feel comfortable with crypto, quite frankly, I don't pretend to know how crypto works. But right now, what is the major crypto? What's the first one that came out with? Bitcoin. Bitcoin's like down to about 20% or 25% of what its all-time highs were. You know, you diversify, that may be something you'd want to consider. Folks, we're entering in a time. Understand, I'll talk about this a little bit more next year or next week. Next week. You hope it's next year. Next week. We have lived under one economic system since World War II. Prior to World War II, countries had their own currency. In fact, we still technically do. But if you were to travel to Germany, you would need to take your dollars and exchange them for marks if you were going to buy and sell in Germany. If you went to France, you would take your money and exchange it for francs. If you went to Britain, you would take your money and exchange it for pounds. At the Bretton Woods Conference, they determined that America promised, since America was the last man standing, the most powerful economy and military on the planet, that the entire world was going to function under the American dollar. That was going to be the international currency of trade. And America promised that their dollar would not be fiat, that it would be tied to gold, so it would always be worth something. We have operated our entire lives, if you have lived and functioned economically since 1944, technically, then we've operated under this one system. Well, the intention of the Great Reset is to change that. They want to do away with all currencies, the dollar in particular, and they want to replace it with a central bank digital currency where they can track and monitor everything you do. We'll talk about that more next week. But understand that we're going to be going into some interesting economic times if they're successful. If they are successful. There's a lot of work that's being done to oppose this. We're involved in a lot of work opposing this. But governors like DeSantis, there are countries that are resisting this that aren't necessarily countries that we would be fond of. Quite frankly, Vladimir Putin and the issue in the Ukraine has more to do with the Great Reset than it does a big country invading a small country. If you wanted to ask our vice president what's going on. As he has his gold-backed ruble, because he's not wanting to go into this system with Klaus Schwab as boss. As I said Sunday, all of these mob bosses, mafiosos sitting around the table of global government, love the idea of consolidating into one global government, and each of them see themselves at the top of the food chain. So when it gets down to it, they are vying with each other to see who is the man on top. And I can assure you that Putin does not want to be to subjugate himself to Klaus Schwab. So there's a lot of things that are working in opposition to this. However, let me just say this. If they are successful and they do away with the dollar, whatever you've earned or you think you have in your investment portfolio goes to squat. And they state that publicly. In 2030, you'll own nothing. And like it. You'll be given an allowance based upon your social credit score. That's that equity of a universal basic income for all humanity. We'll all be serfs. We'll all be equal slaves. And there will be the global elite, the 1% that meets in Davos and flies there on their jets and enjoys the wine and the oil while we're measuring out a day's rations, by scales. So, anyway, diversification is a great idea. Having some food storage, long-term food storage, not a bad idea. You know, let's face it, we lived through last year, or was it the year before, that we had the big ice storm. If you didn't have an SUV, in fact, even if you had an SUV, you may be locked in your home for a week. You know, it's probably not a bad idea to live day-to-day just running to the grocery store. So start thinking differently, because we are in some perilous times, as Paul defined. Avoid unreasonable debt service. Debt's not bad if you keep it in control. Even under the law, the Jews were allowed to indenture themselves for up to 6 years worth of their labor. On the seventh year, there was the sabbatical year of release. And of course, again, Solomon in Proverbs says the borrower becomes enslaved or servant to the lender. Family is supposed to take care of family. It begins with parents raising their own children, quite frankly, educationally, training them in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And then also, parents are supposed to care for their children. Paul rebuked those that didn't take care of their family. It says, if any refuses to provide for his own, especially his own house, then he's denied the faith. He's worse than a pagan infidel. And then they go into some specific details. Widows were to be cared for if there was a widow. In fact, I didn't put all the details of it, but they deal with all this. If there was a widow under the age of 60, they encouraged that she get remarried. But older, up to the age of 60, if she didn't want to get remarried, she didn't have to. Either if she can't take care of herself, then her family is supposed to take care of her. And if she didn't have family that would take care of her, then the church had the responsibility of caring for her. But that's what was governed according to the law, and Paul taught that as a principle to be used even by believers in this what we would call the New Testament era. As parents get older, their kids are to honor them, which means to provide for their physical needs. Now, quite frankly, Cindy and I are going to do our best to never be a burden on our children. So she has made an agreement with the kids that when I get to a point where I'm no longer useful, they're going to push me off a cliff. So, but anyway, we don't want to be a burden to them. We want to be able to provide for ourselves and God willing, you know, leave an inheritance to our kids. That's our design. However, the scripture says, yeah, you kids, you make sure and take care of your parents in their senior years since they took care of you in your youth. Well, what about charity? Well, in every situation, you notice Paul, as he's going through all these Gentile churches, he's taken up a love offering to take back to the persecuted church that was in Jerusalem. Here, early on in Acts, before Paul had even gone on his first missionary journey, they talk about a drought that had been prophesied by this prophet named Agabus. And they took a love offering from the church in Antioch down to the church in Jerusalem to help them. This wasn't a government redistribution of wealth. It was believers. As a matter of fact, you notice it wasn't just the wealthy believers. It was then the Christ followers, every man according to his ability. So some may have been able to toss in a buck, some might have 10, some maybe 100, some maybe 1,000. Every man according to his ability, determined to send relief unto the brethren which lived in Judea, which they did, and they sent it through the hands of the church. And of course, we're taught about charity. Withhold not good from them to whom it is due. That's an important statement. Not everyone is due. If you've got a guy that comes, it's amazing how I see people buying lottery tickets, and it's generally the people that have no business buying lottery tickets. But you know, we do help. If family comes to us for help, we have them fill out a budget. If there is a problem in their budgeting, then they're going to have a problem month after month after month. So putting a patch on it this month isn't going to be the solution. If there's a problem in the budgeting, we want to identify it and help them work to where they live within a budget. And if someone is taking his money out here, hey, man, you know, Brother Paul, I can't afford to pay my electricity. I'm about to lose my electric. What am I going to do? Can you help me? Well, what have you been spending your money on? Oh, booze, drugs, wild women, lottery tickets, you know, the normal. I'd say, Brother Dan, you've got to stop that now, man. I don't know. The devil made me do it. Withhold up from whom it is due, when it is in the power of thine hand to do it. Let me tell you, folks, you may have a good heart, but you're not supposed to take your house payment and give it to someone else so they can make your house payment. If doing so, you can't make yours. Withhold not good from whom it is due when you have the ability to do something about it. And then, of course, James defines some of those that we are certainly supposed to be concerned with. Widows and orphans are continually mentioned throughout the pages of Scripture. Now, summary of some of these other things that we talked about. Number one, biblical economics. We are to work and produce. Work is not a consequence of sin. Before Adam ever sinned, God put him in charge of overseeing the garden and keeping it. That is work. Exodus, at the giving of the law, the part that we miss, we focus on the Sabbath of rest, but along with that, hey, you're supposed to take the seventh day off to rest. The sentence before that says, 6 days, you're going to work. And then, of course, we documented a couple of weeks ago in Colossians, this is a form of worship to the Lord. Servants, obey in all things your employers according to the flesh. Not simply being busy when the boss is watching, but recognize that the work that you do is a testimony to the Lord in your heart. And do it as unto the Lord. Then we talked about money. Money in and of itself is not evil. Money is simply a store of labor that makes trade doable and convenient. If we worked on the barter system, as we said, if you were a painter and you needed to buy eggs, you couldn't buy any eggs until the farmer needed his barn painted. Well, with money, we are able to work in our trades and store up that labor in currency. And it was always backed by gold and silver, or sound money is. It's not just printed on paper. But the love of money is what is sinful and evil. Then we talked about economic systems. All economic systems are capitalist systems. The difference is who owns the capital. You remember during the Cold War with the Soviet Union and America, there was the idea that America was free market capitalist and in Russia was communism, that they were not capitalists. Well, that's not true. Capital is the sum of goods or service needed for production. In a free market, private citizens own and control the capital, own title to their property, and can buy, sell, trade, improve, whatever they want to do with it. And under fascism, which is really where we are now in America, under fascism, you may own the title, but the government controls your property through various regulations and agencies and taxation and things along that line. So we, right now, we have more agencies that are identified by three letters and four letters than there are chins in a Chinese phone book. China's the bad guy. It's still okay to be politically incorrect about China, right? Oh, well. Then there's communism. Under true communism, it really is communal living. Marx actually shared this vision that there would be no ownership. Everyone would work according to their capability, and everyone would only take what they needed at the time that they needed it. Of course, that never works. Socialism is another form, and it's an intermediate step between the free market and communism. But socialism is where the government owns everything, including the people. The government tells you what to do, when to do it, where to live, what to eat. So there is no difference between socialism and a slave plantation, because he who owns the tools makes the rules. When economic freedom is lost, political freedom perishes with it. Now here's the dirty little secret about socialism and communism. Freedom is where we are today, or at least we think we are. As I said, we're more towards fascism. Quite frankly, the Great Reset is purely fascistic, with public-private partnerships where there's going to be a group of elite companies and businessmen that control the governments and control the world. But freedom is we own our own property. We buy, sell, make decisions, do whatever we want to. Marx's goal was global communism, where nobody owned anything. We just contributed to the collective. Now, you just don't go from A to C without going through step B. And what's step B? Well, when you have worked hard to pay your house off, when you've worked hard and saved and didn't go on that cruise every year because you were saving money for retirement, and you've put together your portfolio and you've got your nest egg there and you've worked your whole life, you want to pass that on to your kids? Well, you're not going to be very willing to just give all that away to the state when you have done things the right way and accumulated and saved. So therefore, there's this intermediate step of 87,000 IRS agents, or that police state in between freedom and communism, which has to encourage you to find your checkbook and to find that title that you have in your safe so you can turn it over to the state, and they promise that one of these days they'll just give it to the collective. However, you never get past that dictatorship of the proletariat, the people's dictator. We never did get to communism in Cuba, never did get to communism in the Soviet Union. You never did get to communism in China. It always stopped at this ugly thing that we call dictatorship, and that's where it always will stop. And recognize what the ultimate goal, what year is it by chance? What year are we in? 2022. What month? Okay? Understand that this is the stated goal of the World Economic Forum. By 2030. It's now Agenda 2030. By 2030, you, who's the you? This only affects you if you are a human being living on planet Earth. If you are non-human, you don't live on the earth, and you don't need to worry about this. But this is their stated goal. You'll own nothing. And I doubt very seriously we'll be happy about it. Socialism and communism never work. Every time it's been tried, it's failed. I referenced the countries. We talked about in our couple of lessons ago how the Pilgrims were actually, because of the investment group that was behind helping fund their expedition to the New World, they actually had to pay back debt. And they were charged with collecting all their goods in a storehouse. They were charged with communal living. And even with a people group as small as the pilgrims, and even with a people group that had the integrity and character of the pilgrims, communism doesn't work. When there's no motivation to work hard, to get up early, go to bed late, to sacrifice, to take risks, when you have no potential for reward, you have no motivation to work hard or do beyond the minimum. In fact, when the wall fell, we met with some missionaries, some pastors. Actually, Cindy and I were living in Denver at the time. We were going to South Sheridan Baptist Church. The pastor there came back. He'd been to Russia. He came back and commented. The people there said, yeah, in our former system, they pretended to pay us and we pretended to work. Which is what left to the collapse of why it collapsed economically. Communism does not work. And when people point to the first church, remember biblical worldview. There are four realms of government: self, family, church, and civil. This was after one of the high feasts. You had Jews from around the known world that took a 3-week trip. I say 3 weeks. They had to save up enough money, take a week probably to get to Jerusalem from Greece or from Italy or from Alexandria or from Babylon. They'd spend a week here during the holiday, the holy day, and then a week to get back home. Then they start work again. Well, there were 3,000 that were born again at Pentecost. Well, they stayed in Jerusalem, never went home. They stayed with the apostles because they were expecting Jesus to return even then. Well, what happened? They didn't have an ATM card. They couldn't wire somebody via Western Union to send them money. They literally ran out. So how did the church respond to this? Well, those that had resources, Barnabas being a primary example, sold their resources, which was their property, and they were never mandated to sell it. This was free will by their choice. This was church government functioning as a church, where those that had the ability were compassionate and helped those with whom it was due within their own church body. Then we talked about government spending. This is why big government always kills the people. Government spending is inefficient and wasteful. Not Republican, not Democrat. It's just an economic fact. We talked about third-party purchasing. There's three types of purchases. First-party purchasing is when you're spending your money on something that you intend to consume. Therefore, you're concerned about price because it's your money. You're concerned about the quality, because you're going to be the end user. Second party purchasing is when only one of those two factors is true. You may be receiving or you may be using your parents' credit card. Therefore, you're not concerned about the price to buy a pair of jeans that you're going to wear, so you're concerned about the quality. Or you're purchasing a wedding gift for someone and you're concerned about the price because you're spending your money, but you're going to send it to them and you figure in 3 years they won't remember who sent them that toaster anyway. So when it breaks, they won't be mad at you. So you're a little more lenient about the quality. And then there's third party purchasing, where you're spending someone else's money on something that you aren't going to be the consumer of. Therefore, you don't give a rip about price or quality. So 100% of the time, there will be waste, fraud, and abuse in government spending, because all government spending is third-party purchasing. That's why I think it was Lincoln that said government must only do what government has to do. The free market always works better every time. Taxation without consent is slavery and theft. We talked about what the ideal form of government was. Free people constituting a limited government, defining the powers of that government, and then people hard working, they recognize that if they want police, they're going to have to pay. Well, how big of a fire department do you want? What kind of fire truck should the fire department have? Well, the citizens of that community have to determine how much in taxes they want to pay. But it's the people in control of the government. That is proper government. The people constitute limited government. All money belongs to the people. People must fund the government they create. People decide how much of their money. Whenever you hear a Democrat saying, we're going to get rid of these Republican tax cuts, it's almost like the tax cuts are taking something away that belongs to the government. No, it doesn't. Nothing belongs to the government. The government owns nothing. The government has no money. It's your money. supposed to be up to us determining the size of our government we wish to fund and pay for. Well, improper government is the government owns and controls everything, directly or indirectly, through regulatory agencies. The government decides what it will do and how large it will be. And then a benevolent government generously allows you to keep some of your own money. Did you all see that record-setting lottery this last week up in New York? It was $1.3 billion. Did you see if the person chose to take it in a lump sum, what the after-tax amount was? $430 million. So 75% of it went bye-bye. That's something, when we were preaching against the establishing of the lottery 10 years ago, something I didn't think about. But the government is a sure winner in every state where the lottery is passed, because the government's going to get half of the proceeds regardless. So the idea of the government saying pay your fair share is theft. And understand, a graduated income tax is theft. If we're going to take a vote of the people in here and we said, hey, we're going to handle things democratically, and we're going to vote that anybody that makes less than $50,000 should pay zero taxes, because we just don't have enough. But anybody that makes more than $50,000 should pay 50% of their income over $50,000. Let me ask you, how much of their possessions do you own? None of it. What right do you have to say that they should pay 50% of something that they own or earned over a designated amount that doesn't happen to affect you? A fair taxation means that we all share the pain equally. So if we have a 10% flat tax, we're all going to be pained equally. Everyone has the same level of commitment. Of course, I shared this slide with Thomas Sowell. What exactly is your fair share of what someone else owns or has worked for? And then recognize that according to the IRS, the top 10% of taxpayers pay 71% of the taxes. If you want to talk about fairness, that doesn't seem quite right. Of course, Benjamin Franklin made this statement. I modified it to this. Democracy is two wolves voting that the lambs pays 50% of his income while they collect the welfare. That is not justice. Then, of course, Economics 101, if you want more of something, subsidize it. If you want less of something, then tax it. And then, as we are getting ready to be afflicted with this Green New Deal, deceptively called the Inflation Reduction Act, which is an absolute lie. It's going to do nothing but cause inflation to increase. Corporations don't pay taxes. You add a 15% tax to the corporation, they're just going to pass it on to the consumer because they can't stay in business if they're losing money. And we talked about inflation. Inflation is an invisible tax. Inflation is determined by two factors. It's actually too many dollars chasing too few products. So it's determined by the availability of products in the amount of currency. I referenced why Mickey Mantle baseball cards are worth so much. It's hard to find a mint condition Mickey Mantle baseball card. We were having dinner last Wednesday night after church. Dave and Steve were talking about the days where they would take their Mickey Mantle baseball cards and put them in their bicycle spokes. Now they are so rare, they are worth millions of dollars at auction. But at one time, as I had said a while ago about the Bretton Woods Agreement, we had vowed to the world that our dollar would not be worthless. It wouldn't be fiat currency. It was going to be backed by gold. And it was from 1944 until what, 1971, when we decided to not back our dollars by gold. We decided it was much easier just to print money if we wanted to. Again, we talked about the modern currency. Now it just says it's legal tender because the government says it is and because we all agree to use it. And we talked about what inflation does. If there was that amount of money in the M3 system, and then the government decided to, and you have $1, then you've got the buying power of $1 out of this amount of dollars. But if you doubled, I also mentioned, at one time we actually at least feigned to believe that we were paying our bills. So even when we went to war in World War II, we funded it by borrowing money from the citizens. Why did the government need to borrow money from the citizens? because the government has no money. So they would sell war bonds. Now we don't even pretend anymore. But what happens to the value of your savings when they double the money supply? Basically, not quite exact, but if they double the money supply, then your buying power is cut in half. So if you've saved $1 million for retirement and they continue to print trillions of dollars, then you will still have that millions of dollars that says on your Merrill Lynch statement. And then when you go down to buy a loaf of bread and you run your card through the deal, it says $87. Yep. Wow, for a loaf of bread. And you'll tell your kids, you know, when I was a kid, we all know those stories. That is inflation. By the way, that is ungodly. God rebuked that and said, don't do it in the law. We talked about the free market. Free market makes everyone richer. Just simply look at the last 125 years, the growth of the telephone. You know why the telephone has made all these changes? You know what? If we were living in the Soviet Union, we'd still be using that telephone. You know why? Because the government would own all the business. There'd be no motivation or incentive to get creative or try to make it better. They already have 100% of the market share. But if you're in a free market and you're trying to earn a greater market share and make a bigger profit, then you're going to take chances. You're going to use some of your creative skills to create a better mousetrap, and the world will beat a path to your door. And of course, we love the 1980s, and now we have these phones where we have more computer in our pockets than NASA did when Neil Armstrong landed on the moon. So this is from 1948, which is when this system was introduced to the world, to what we have now, 80 years later? Why is that? Because free market. Free market makes everyone's life richer. By the way, these things, they get, like I commented last week, you can get a 42-inch flat-screen TV for like $100. In fact, on Black Friday sales, they practically give them away. One time, they were thousands of dollars. But understand, the free market enriches everyone. Adam Smith, the great Christian economist that wrote the book Wealth of Nations, which was right next to Blackstone's commentaries, one of the primary favorite reading materials for the colonists, said that self-interest balanced by free competition promotes society's best interest. And he's correct. Last section is this one. We hadn't got to this one. The others are kind of a summary, but we're going to beat the last ounce of life out of this horse tonight. So we're summarizing. Greater the government, the greater the poverty, the greater the freedom, the greater the wealth. Now, again, we will credit our friend Congressman Bob McEwen. This is some of the resources that he brought to our Liberty Pastors Network that we are utilizing. If this scale was a freedom index, and it represented basically your freedom, and you went into Walmart and you had $100 and everything in Walmart was priced less than $100, you would have complete freedom. You can go in and buy whatever you want. Nothing would be off limits. However, if as you were walking into the store, a robber met you in the parking lot and stole $25 from you, or you opened your pay stub and found out that the federal government, FICA, and other sources had gotten there before you did, and you only had $75, what has happened to your freedom? Your freedom has been reduced by 25%. What happens if it was increased to 50%? How much freedom would you have at that point in time? Be cut in half. That's exactly right. Recognize that government doesn't create jobs. Whenever you hear a politician say, we're going to create jobs, that is a lie to steal your vote. The free market creates jobs. The government inhibits job creation with high taxes and many regulations. We want a free state. When Dan ran for office, and when I attempted to run for office, Dan was successful, I was not. But part of our strategy, our platform, was providing freedom so that the free market could flourish. Minimal taxes, minimal regulations. You know what? If you build your house and you want to put your light switch up here, I don't care. Knock yourself out. When it turns around and you want to sell it one of these days, you're going to have a little problem. But we don't need the city telling you you must have your light switch at 4 foot, 6 inches high or whatever off the ground. You know, what's amazing, when we built this add-on to our church, they made us lower the thermostats down to a certain height. You know, there's a reason we put them up here. We don't want these little urchins turning the temperature down to 60. We're paying the bills. We want to control the thermostat. So, meeting the city code, we brought them down to the right height. And then once we got occupancy, we had to put these lock boxes over the top of them since they wouldn't let us put them where we wanted to put them in the first place. And then the government doesn't produce anything. This is what's behind this. The government simply takes efficient money out of the economy. Remember the lesson on third-party purchasing. All government spending is third-party purchasing. So the more money the government extracts from the economy and takes from the free market, the whole system is going to be less efficient. Picture this black hole as being your government. Black hole, by definition, is a region of space-time exhibiting such strong gravitational effects that nothing, not even particles and electromagnetic radiation, such as light, can escape from it. Well, all government spending is a black hole of third-party purchasing, with money being sucked out of the free market. So the more money we funnel through the mob of government, the less efficient those dollars will be used, the greater waste, fraud, corruption, and abuse there will be in that community. I pulled these from a couple of years ago. Michelle Bachmann, when she was a congresswoman, issued a report stating that every $3 in food stamps that goes to the needy, there is $7 eaten up in bureaucracy. So out of every $10 that's given for charitable efforts funneled through the government, 70% of it is wasted. Whereas by comparison, Samaritan's Purse had roughly 90 cents out of every dollar making it to the end user, because it is a ministry and basically it is an example of free market. Of course, this slide tells it all. Up until after, 1950, Korea was one people. Of course, the communists sought to take it over. They had the same history, the same culture, the same genetics, the same everything. They were one people. But after the armistice was signed in 1953, North Korea was communist and atheist. South Korea was free market and inundated with missionaries and heavily Christian. Now notice this satellite photo. Do you notice a difference between North Korea and South Korea? Well, understand this principle of big government only works that way every time. And then our closing slide, and again, I credit Bob McEwen. First time I'd seen these examples were from him probably 15 years ago. And there's none better. But in 1945, the Central Michigan train station was a wonder of the North American world. Literally was a tourist destination. People would go through Michigan just to see this incredible work of architectural craftsmanship and design. And then, of course, to the right is a picture of one of the cities of Hiroshima or Nagasaki after the atomic bombs were dropped. 73 years later, on the left, after decades of Democrat leadership, we have what government can do to a once the most wealthy city on planet Earth, Detroit, Michigan, with all the car manufacturers in Detroit. And then you look to the right, 73 years after the atomic bomb, with free market and freedom, you see this flourishing metropolis. To the left, you see what was once a symbol of American exceptionalism. Close with this slide. Isaiah says, "Let the wicked forsake his way, and the unrighteous man his thoughts. Let him return unto the Lord, and he will have mercy upon him, and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, saith the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. You know, as often as we all want to give God advice, the reality is He has much greater wisdom than we do. When we do it God's way, it works 100% of the time.